The views expressed on the following broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice, and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
Welcome to Entitled to Overcome, Exploring Solutions for Life Today, a presentation of Take 12 Recovery Radio. And now, here are your co-hosts, Dave Fleming and the Monty Man.
Overcome. Welcome, one and all, to another fine episode of Take 12 Recovery Radio's Entitled to Overcome Solutions for Life Today with our good friend Dave Fleming. Dave, how the heck are you there, my friend? Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. I love that song. It's like, start your day, like every day with that. It just gives you kind of this, yeah, let's go.
Yeah, let's move it. Let's move it on up. Not to the east side, not to the west side. Straight up, baby. Straight
overcome,
up.
Overcome.
So the topic this week is the courage to change. So we'll be talking about the courage to change. Remember the Cowardly Lion? Remember that guy?
Put him up.
He needed the courage to change. Maybe you out there need the courage to change as well. We'll see. We also have the Ask It Basket coming up for you. But before any of that, we just want to say thank you to those of you who are financially helping us to stay on the air. We are in need of your help. Those of you that may have been considering it but just haven't stepped over that line quite yet. Listen, if you would like to help sponsor this show as well as other shows here at Take 12 Recovery Radio, visit our website at take12radio.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the page, and on the left-hand side, there's an orange donate button. Just click on that. It'll show you what to do. We would appreciate it greatly. For those of you who have already done that, thank you so much. No amount is too small. We just appreciate your consistency and supporting all of our shows here at Take 12 Recovery Radio. Nobody gets paid here. Everything goes to the operation of the station and being able to maintain our equipment. We had one monitor go out on us the other day during a power surge or a power outage or a power something. So we got to replace that, and God will provide. So, but thank you, one and all, for doing that. So, Dave, you know what time it is, right?
Yeah.
It's time for this.
It's time for Dave and Monty's Icebreaker.
That's right. Or we break the ice, make a mess, and...
Who's going to clean that up?
The gnomes.
The gnomes,
The gnomes.
Well, at least they're good for something.
So we got a new one. If you're on YouTube, you can see this. This is Bigfoot Gnome.
Satch.
Yeah, his name is Leggett. Because we got him right outside of Leggett. You know where Leggett is?
Yeah.
Yeah? At the... what do you call it? The Legend of Bigfoot tourist trap.
Is it Leggett or legit?
I think it's Leggett. It's Leggett. So he's also got one, if you're watching on YouTube, he's also got one on his back. Yep. But they're there willingly. He's not dragging them off to eat them. Bigfoot is friends with the gnomes.
Well, they can move a lot quicker through the forest hitching a ride because
they got little tiny feet. And
Bigfoot's got a pretty wide...
He's got big feet. That's why he's called Bigfoot.
He's got a wide stride. cover 100 times the distance.
Have you ever seen a Bigfoot? Ever seen something that you thought may have been a Bigfoot?
I cannot confirm nor deny.
That will be on our next show, Conspiracy Theories by Dave Fleming.
Is it a conspiracy if it's actually true? That's my always.
Well, it may
question.
Not be a theory, but it may be a conspiracy.
Against the people.
Yeah. So here we go. These are just little interesting ditties. Tunnels underneath buildings. Portland's creepy Shanghai tunnels, said to be one of the most haunted places in America. The Shanghai tunnels. I had no idea that these existed. You ever heard of these?
Not them specifically, but I know there are tunnels all throughout underneath the United States.
Yeah, yeah. There's tunnels at all sorts of places. Yep. The Shanghai tunnels in Portland are bone-chilling creepy. Located underneath the streets of Old Town, these tunnels were used between 1850 and 1941 for illegal activity, including human trafficking. Many people died in the dark, dingy tunnels. But you can take tours of them now. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'd want to take a tour of a tunnel. Tunnels kind of creep me out.
Did they do a cleansing down there?
I don't know. People have reported moaning and groaning, and but you know, put a couple of
don't even
microphones down there. And the creepy history of Oregon State Hospital. Years ago, this hospital in Salem was an insane asylum where terrible malpractices were said to occur. Built in the 1800s, this place had secret underground tunnels connecting the buildings where terrible experiments were rumored to have been conducted on patients. Part of the hospital was preserved as a museum. I did not know that you could go there and tour this place. And to this day, visitors claim to experience paranormal activity here as well as some eerie feeling that they are being watched.
Yeah, that's why they turned it into a museum, because of all the activity. They had to move everything to a different spot. And I mean, I know I drove by there the other day, actually. And
yeah.
Not the other day. It's probably about a month ago. And they are expanding, I think, across the street.
Are they?
I don't know if it's part of that
facility
or if it's another part of the government building. There's a government building across the street.
Yeah, the dome or something like that, isn't it?
I don't know. I just happened to accidentally drive by it. I was heading to Salem.
What's that, on State Street there? Going from downtown towards Lancaster. It's all there. It's a beautiful property. The building's kind of creepy.
Yeah. I mean, I was heading to the eye doctor and, or not the eye doctor, the dentist up there. And
yeah, get it right, Dave.
Yeah.
My doctor, the dentist.
Maybe they pulled something out when they pulled my tooth out.
Well, here's one that's interesting. This is just right down the road from us. The Kuhn Theater in Lebanon, Oregon, which is like 14 miles away.
Where is that on Main Street?
It's on Main Street, yeah. Built in 1932, this theater is reportedly haunted by the ghost of a young girl in a white dress who fell from the theater's balcony to her death. Visitors and staff of the theater claim to experience strange activity like doors opening and closing. That would be the customers. disembodied laughter of children, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, the Kuhn Theater is kind of a creepy theater. It's very cold in there. I've gone to a couple of events that were held there before.
Really?
Yeah.
I've driven by it, but that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's on the list of, things to investigate.
So, what does this all have to do with recovery? Absolutely nothing. Nothing. Nothing at all. Just some stupid trivia stuff that I decided to dig up. How about that? What do you think, Dave? totally wasting the listeners' time. I love it.
Well, you can correlate anything to recovery. Maybe
I guess
you could. It's the ghosts in your past that are still haunting you that you need to get rid of.
Yes. What kind of tunnels are you keeping secret from everybody? What is passing through your mind in the tunnels of your psyche?
Tunnels of your psyche.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for that nonsense.
And that's that. Dun, 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 dun.
All right, we'll be back right after this with the Ask It Basket.
Mm-hmm. Overcome.
Hey, listen, I get it. I get that there's controversy around the whole CBD thing in the recovery community. But remember, contempt prior to investigation. So let me help you out here for a minute. Founded by a father and son in addiction recovery, Exact Nature's all-natural CBD products are specially formulated to help you face the exceptional challenges of recovery, be it addictive cravings, depression, anxiety, or even improving your sleep. Listen, learn more at exactnature.com. And as a Take 12 Recovery Radio listener, use the code TAKE12 and you'll receive a 20% discount on your order. Oh, and by the way, there is no THC in Exact Nature products. So you might not get high, but you might just get to feeling better. That's Exact Nature at exactnature.com.
Hey, check it out. You can now access all of our shows from a variety of podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, YouTube, Podomatic, and Player FM. Simply search for Take 12 Recovery Radio, and you'll be tuned into the best in recovery broadcast journalism. Also available at take12radio.com.
It's time for the Take 12 Recovery Radio Ask It Basket. All righty. So the question for Dave, myself, and the gnomes comes from Steve C. from Sonoma County. And he asks, when a parent is an alcoholic, is abusive, and not affectionate to the children, how will the children not become like the parent when the children are adults of their children? He goes on to say, my grandfather was an alcoholic and extremely cruel to his children. My mother rarely drank alcohol, but is non-affectionate and abusive towards her children and grandchildren. My two uncles were just like their father. Two of my aunts were alcoholics. Two of my cousins committed suicide as young adults. We were the same age. None of my siblings have had issues with alcohol. Three out of four have abused drugs. Just case in point there, alcohol is a drug, so there you go.
Right.
My sister and I were cruel for a short period of time to our children. Luckily, all of us have become kind and loving parents. Wow, that's quite a lineage.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Abusive behavior, right? And alcoholism and
yeah.
So again, when a parent is an alcoholic, is abusive and not affectionate to children, how will the children not become like the parent? They do, don't they?
Well, that's
much of the time.
That's a. It can be a complicated.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, there's a lot there. I mean, there's. There's the problem, and it sounds like they've discovered the solution along the way, or at least part of the solution.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would bet that there's a lot of similar stories out there,
mm-hmm.
Our listeners. This is a pretty typical family lineage for people in recovery or with loved ones that are in recovery.
Right.
Or struggling with their addiction. How will the children not become like the parent when the children are adults of their children? So I was just thinking about this the last couple of days, and this might even be a whole show on this.
Like adult children of?
Well, it's a great topic to dive into, but it's can be, you know, a little complicated,
mm-hmm.
trying to sort it out. And I know this just from personal experience, right?
Right.
So there's, I know I talk from my personal experience. When I looked at my family when I was just, when I got free from my family, you might say, or I started doing, you know, my own family. I looked at the negative behaviors and I would say, I'm not going to be like this person. I'm not going to do this. I'm not X, Y, Z, right?
Right.
And, you know, then it turns out that here I end up being an alcoholic, addict, and doing some of those same negative behaviors. And it used to confuse me because I was like, what the hell? You know, you're trying to, you're doing, using,
you don't want to be that way.
Positive. You're trying to use this affirmations or whatever. But in fact, it's actually a negative reinforcement. And there's a, I never really got that because it's, you know, pretty in depth. I got some things here today that, you know, maybe touch on briefly. You can do some of your own research or whatever, but when I went to inpatient treatment for the first time, I learned that that was my biggest problem, is those negative reinforcements, because you're actually reinforcing the negative behavior rather than
thinking that it was a positive reinforcement.
Well,
I will
thinking
not be
that
like-
I'm talking, you know, doing the self-talk into not doing it when you're actually, in fact,
enforcing,
ending up doing the same thing that you're trying not to do. Right. And then if you look at even scripture, I'm not sure where it's at. Maybe, you know, where it talks about how we do the things we
Paul's talking about that.
Don't want to do.
Right.
Even though we know they're wrong, we still don't. We still do them.
Right.
And it turns into this automatic reflex, like conditioning.
Right.
And we end up with this conditioning in psychology. They talk a lot about this. I forget the term, but it's this conditioning where we're actually trying to not do something, and then we end up doing it rather than putting, like, this is how I'm going to be. I'm going to be, you know, a good parent. I'm going to, you know, teach my children, you know, good things, X, Y, Z, whatever that, whatever your, you know, your morals and values are. Because this gentleman is, it sounds like that they've seen these patterns over time and they've, chosen to work on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're, you know, in recovery and doesn't really say whether or not they're in.
Actually, later on, he posted a text, that he has worked through a lot of his things in, AA and NA.
Right.
Yeah. So he, Steve C himself has, I know that. Yeah.
Yeah, because that was a big one of the places that I learned how to correct some of the problems is in the rooms, and that was just over time. You know, I learned, I started looking at, you know, doing the four steps, started looking at your history, and then when I was at my church, I was blessed enough to go through some teachings that, was a God thing. It was like, it happened one time, these teachings at my church, and then they never did them again. And it was just, one of them answered all those questions. It started looking at like generational curses kind of thing.
Yeah, in the Bible, there's lots of those that are,
right.
You know, Abraham and, yeah, you bet.
And so, and then they named off a bunch of things that can be tied into generational curses and, that I didn't really realize, but when I did more investigation, then it made sense. And it's like, some of it didn't make sense. It's just, you know, I think people's opinion, but anyway, it made me think about things. And then I got to know more about my family history over the years I don't know, it's probably it's probably been 10 years now. Maybe not quite 10 years, but I learned that even my grandpa that you never heard anything about, turns out he was an alcoholic too.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a little small community that basically they all helped each other, right? And so he didn't have any consequences. It was like, oh, you know, hey, you know, call the sheriff and hey, so-and-so's, you know.
Right.
Needs a ride home. He's getting out a little out of control. And they'd pick him up and they'd drive him home.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, and then there's other people throughout my family on both sides. There's been a history of alcohol or drug abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And so it made me realize that, you know, this, some of it is, you know, they talk about nature nurture thing.
Sure.
And I realized that, you know, this, maybe this, whatever they call it, DNA
mm-hmm.
thing is there's something to that.
Mm.
I even found out why, you know, my dad had passed away and then found out he was still alive in Minnesota. And that was one of the reasons why we ended up going out there. But the first time that I spent time with him and realized that, you know, even though I wasn't around him,
yeah,
I had the same mannerisms. My family was kind of laughing at us because it's like you guys,
yeah,
are walking the same. You guys, you know, kind of talk the same. You cook your food the same. You do this, you know. He was an alcoholic, and I was never around that, so I never even, you know, it wasn't something that I picked up on. There wasn't a whole lot of drinking or drugging. There wasn't hardly any at my house when I was growing up, you know.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think I'm thinking about our friend who wrote in and this family tree, so to speak, right, and listening to yours, do you think that the cruelty, the behavior, let's say the alcohol wasn't even there,
right,
but the behavior was,
right,
the abuse, the neglect, no affection, that kind of thing, that'd be one thing, but now we have alcohol in there. Do you think that is a byproduct of alcoholism, some of those behaviors, and therefore when alcoholism is genetically passed from one generation to the next, those behaviors are passed also? Or do you think the behaviors are the things that are being passed? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So there's that DNA component, if you will, right?
Right.
Because you could have the same issues with behaviors even if there's no alcohol involved.
Right, sure.
Like there could be a generation where the parents don't drink at all,
mm-hmm,
but the behaviors are the same because that's from that conditioning, right? I, stepping back and looking at from the big picture, I saw the same thing happened with my mom and her brother,
mm-hmm,
how they were treated by their father,
mm-hmm,
and then the things that they exhibited in their life. Right.
Yeah.
And I've seen this in people that I've helped, that I've worked with. I've seen it with other family members. You know, I even see some of the stuff with my kids.
Right.
And so it doesn't, the alcohol doesn't have to be a factor. It's more of the behavioral issues that keep getting passed.
So
because someone could not drink, say, I'm not going to drink because,
yeah,
my parents
did this,
or my grandparents were alcoholics, and so trying to tie together, because sometimes we're told,
right,
that they're tied together, the behaviors, right?
Yeah.
But yet they still do the same behaviors. They're still unloving. They're still cold. They're still not affectionate.
It may not have anything to do with the alcoholism at all.
Well, it's from the conditioning that they got
from
the behaviors,
the previous,
from their parents. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can, if you're like hurt people, right? So
right,
if you're hurt, if you're neglected and all that, whether alcohol or drugs are involved at all, there's a good chance that you're going to pass that. You're going to act that way.
Right.
Not necessarily, but there's a good chance of it. But then so it's an experiential thing that you've picked up, right? Not always necessarily a DNA transfer, right?
Right.
It's from your experience, and then you pass that on, and people develop you know, by right. developing new neural pathways, they're starting to develop that kind of DNA, right? And then
yeah.
they are passing it on.
Well, if you think about it, there, you know, you get it's 16 to 18 years of conditioning.
Right.
And then you go off
that
on your own.
That changes your mind. That changes your brain.
Well, yeah.
Right.
Especially in an early age, right? If you're, right. if that's from the get-go, there's certain things that are come into play.
Yeah.
They're conditioned in you that you carry on throughout your life.
And then people say, well, there's no reason for Johnny to be acting that way. He needs just to do better and be more kind. And so Johnny finds out that he's got a history of abuse and his parents had a history of abuse and their parents. And then people say, well, he's just using that as an excuse. He's just hiding behind, a mental health professional's diagnosis. There's no reason for that. We hear that all the time, right?
Yeah, why don't you just stop?
Yeah, just stop.
Right.
Just stop. But at what point does little Johnny need to suck it up and start taking responsibility for his behavior?
Right. Well, that's one of the things that I've kind of got to is like, I can come up with all, I can say that this and this happened in my past. And so that's why I'm the way I am today.
Mm-hmm.
But I think once we become an adult, we can't use some of those excuses that were, you know, we were conditioned by our parents or grandparents or whoever, our step parents or whatever.
Yeah.
So
once we do know we better, have to, now like, we have to make an effort to do better, right?
Right. If we have the capacity to be honest with ourselves, right?
There you go.
Even if you take the drugs and alcohol away, we need to look at our lives. And is it a problem? Because if we... Most people that are in recovery, they start looking at, you know, if they're doing the fourth and fifth step, right? They're looking at their history, their lineage.
Yes.
Right? It's
yes.
part of that searching and fearless moral
Absolutely
inventory.
Absolutely they are.
And
yeah.
so it's like, okay, so where did this all come from? Is this me or is this someone else's issue or is this someone else's issue that I've latched on to or I've been conditioned to do the same thing and I need to change this because I'm not happy.
Right.
A lot of times when people say, well, why don't you just change or that, you know, how come you know, you don't really have any reason to be this way. It's like, it's because you're looking at superficial things. It's like, if we don't talk to people, we don't share with what's going on, then we get that. But we also get the other side, like you're saying, you always use that as an excuse.
Yeah.
Because there's also there's a portion of the community out there that hasn't gone through that, right? The negative
yeah.
thing.
Right.
Or they're just, it's, you know, a blank spot for them.
Right. So
right?
they don't get it.
Right.
They, nor should they be expected to. They're not, they just don't.
Well, and a lot of parents get into that mode when they're, you know, their kids run into these problems with drugs and alcohol, you know, opiate problem is a big one, right? And then they got to go to treatment and then there's like, well, why don't you just stop and why don't you just find God and like do the right thing and get your life back together. Here's all this stuff,
yeah.
You know, you got a job, you got a car, you got a place to live and you know, why can't you just get your act together and stop doing these drugs?
Right.
Because maybe that's a generation that addiction part of it skipped, but I would bet that there's some other addiction, whatever that may be, that
mm-hmm.
they run into, like shopping or codependency or
something's fueling
right.
that. Yeah.
I found this great book along the way. I used to go to thrift stores all the time and just look for recovery books to give to people.
Yeah. Thrift stores are a great resource for recovery books.
Right. Because people, you know, they go through them and they
they see value in them. So they donate them, they give
right.
them away, or they leave their recovery.
Right. Or the family member passes away and they have a shelf
yeah.
of books. And
right.
I've gotten some pretty neat stuff, some older stuff. Anyway. There's this book here. I don't know if you can see that very well.
Self-esteem, recovery from addictive thinking.
right?
Is that Brian Robertson?
This is Brian Robertson, yes.
Yeah.
This is, I would suggest anybody that struggles with addiction or, you know, behavioral things that are passed down from family members to family members. It's one of those books that you run across that changes things in your life and it helps you look at things from a different perspective or dives deeper into the behavioral issues.
Right.
Right.
So is it one of those books that produces aha moments?
Yes, very
yeah,
much so.
Yeah. Those are good. He's searching for a gem from the book.
Oh, there's a lot. I mean, like here's a section in, I think it was this chapter one. Are you an addictive thinker? Are you stuck in addictive thinking? If you keep repeating the following, then you are stuck in addictive thinking, which inevitably leads to addictive living and eternal unhappiness. So you got, do you beat yourself up for what you should have done? I'm just going to read off the topics, not the details. Number two is, do you put up resistance to keep things as they are? Number three, do you react to life rather than waste your time taking action when problems or worries befall you? Number four, are you a victim? Five, do you hold on to resentments? Six, do you want what you cannot have? Number seven, are you pessimistic and live by the motto, misery is optional? Eight, do you let fear dominate your life? Nine, do you always worry about what if instead of what is? Do you feel unworthy? 11, are you a perpetual people pleaser?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this sounds like all stuff that
we're very familiar with.
Well, we connect with yeah. addiction, but the reality is like we've said before, the addiction is not the problem. It's just a right. symptom of the problem.
Right.
Number 12, I get this one circled there. Do you neglect yourself? 13, do you look for things outside yourself to make you happy? 14, if all else fails, do you move to a new apartment, town, country, or continent?
Oh my gosh. I know somebody that every time something uncomfortable happens at their job, this lady gets sick, starts calling in sick, and eventually calls in sick so much she loses her job.
Yep.
And it's a pattern, right? Because she cannot develop emotional sobriety enough to be able to stick with the job during the difficult times at the job. And so her coping mechanism is to flight, right? She'll leave, she'll run, and she'll hide behind, well, I don't feel good today. And then then they get fed up, and then she's without employment.
Is that about the job, or is it about dealing with personalities within the job?
You betcha. Because her problem at the job is a symptom. There's something else going on inside right. of her where she's not able to cope properly with difficult people. Because right. you're always going to have difficult people in your life, no matter where you work.
Well, yeah, unless you start your own business.
And then you got you to worry about.
Right. There's another thing that I wanted to read here just briefly, because I know this is, like I said, this is a pretty deep subject, and we can have a whole...
And let me just say, let me interrupt you a minute. Let me just say, I know this guy, and he has done a complete turnaround, and I want to congratulate you, Steve.
Yeah.
He has done a complete turnaround. He helps people all the time. He is constantly in the service of other people.
That's nice.
And that's got to be a key to his overcoming his own stuff, right?
As long as he's still... taking care of himself.
As long as he's not being codependent.
Helping others can be an addictive thing in itself.
Absolutely. Right? It can. Yeah.
I know this is, this ties into that also that the book is kind of helps is a roadmap to identifying what a lot of your issues are and then solving the issues, right? Creating a roadmap to solve them. But there, I found this 10 ways parents destroy their children's self-esteem. And I know these are things that oftentimes parents think is a good thing, but ends up being a bad thing, right? So comparing children to siblings or other children, criticizing the child's innate abilities, temperament, or characteristics, requiring conformity, continuous harping about mistakes, teaching that a child's dreams, aspirations, and goals are impossible to reach, living their kids' lives and planning their careers, evaluating a child's intellectual capacity upon grade point average, zeroing in on so-called negative characteristics, 9, never praising, and 10, demanding blind obedience. Just do what I say, right?
Oh, because I said so. Yeah.
Right?
There you go.
Obviously, we're familiar, very yeah, familiar very with that familiar one, right? That.
Yeah.
And I think in sometimes we can even get into that when dealing with clients that are struggling with their getting sober in their recovery, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to say, right?
Yeah.
Just do this just because do I it, said man. So because I know it works.
Yeah.
You know, quit asking questions. Just
follow
do
the directions,
it.
You knucklehead. Just do it.
What's that? Bob Newhart.
Oh yeah, counseling? Bob Newhart counseling. Yeah.
Just stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're sitting on a tack. Just get off the tack. I mean, how much more simpler can it be?
Yeah. When I do this, this happens, you know. Well, then stop doing it.
Just stop doing it.
Just stop it.
How? I don't know. How to stop?
If you stop it, then the problem will be solved, right? You know, so there's all these things that parents do to help develop their children.
Yeah.
That aren't necessarily
helpful.
Helpful, right?
Right.
But because they were taught the same things, here's where the inconsistency or the conflict is, right?
Yeah.
Is like, well, this is the way that my parents taught me, right? So then they do it to their children, and the thinking is well, look at me, I came out okay. When reality is like, okay, I may have a house and a good job and a good career.
Yeah, but you may be just but messed
I'm,
up.
I'm just reality is I'm miserable because my spiritually and intellectually and maybe emotionally I'm not being fulfilled. I'm just doing what I need to do to make it in society.
And you know what is a red flag for that you're not doing okay is you are so if you're trying to control and dictate your child's life even when in their adulthood, right, and you keep trying to do it, what was going on in your life that you got to try to dictate everything they do?
Well, the thing is you got to be, when we look at that as the children of those parents,
yeah,
what I've learned in recovery is like I have to give them some space and some understanding,
mm-hmm,
right? Because they are just doing the best that they can with what they were taught.
Sure, yeah.
Right?
That makes
sense. Until the same thing happens with us. Until we learn something different or try something different, we're going to be doomed to keep repeating the same thing.
All right, we got to move on into the topic, and we're not going to get to it. So here's my segue into it.
What the heck?
It's a noisemaker. It's a thunder thingy. It's Wes gave this to me a long time ago.
Are you not doing it the right way?
I don't know. Let's see. There we go. Hello. Oh, I don't know. See? See what you miss out if you're not watching on YouTube.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So the book again is Self-Esteem, Recovering from Addictive Thinking by Brian Robertson, PhD. You might want to write that down. All right. The topic this week, and by the way, thank you, Steve. Listen, folks, if you had a question about recovery or just life issues. Doesn't have to be about 12 steps. Doesn't have to be about meetings or any of that stuff. But just shoot us. I mean, we don't have all the answers, but we may have something that will help. Just shoot us an email at take12radio, that's T-A-K-E, the number 12, radio at comcast.net, or send it in a message on our Facebook page, Take 12 Radio, or, yeah, just get it to us. There's a million ways to get it to us. You don't have to wait for this show. I mean, you can just send them anytime during the week, during the month, and we'll gather them together, and we'll address them as best as we can. All right. So the topic on this show is the courage to change. And, of course, the serenity prayer, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. There's a suggestion here that there, not even a suggestion, there is an absolute here that there are things that just are not in your power to do anything about. And that there are other things that you have a great deal of ability to do something about. But we have a tendency to fret and worry and mope around about the things we can't change and do nothing about the things we can. Right. So we need courage to do that. And in the Serenity Prayer, it says, God, grant me. You know, a grant is never issued without something expected on your part. They're not free. Grants aren't free.
But actually, they are.
Well, no, you've got to apply for it. You've got to do some footwork.
Right.
You know, that's what I'm saying. You just can't say, God, grant me this, and sit back on your laurels and do nothing.
Right.
Right? So what do we do with this, Dave? Do you want to read this reading?
Well, and I think this is another one of those God moments, as we say, because the question that Stephen sent in ties right into this, right?
Sure does. Yeah.
Because it sounds like he was able to identify the generational things that happened,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then make some changes in his own life.
In his own life, yeah.
To, I like to kind of draw the line in the sand and say that enough, it's going to end. All this nonsense is going to end.
There's changes with me.
With me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do something different. And sounds like that's what he's doing. And that's the biggest thing about change, right?
Yeah.
Is us doing something different, so that we can get a different result, which is kind of scary in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the reading goes on to say recovery involves change, and change means doing things differently. Right.
Yeah.
That's what we touched on. The problem is many of us resist doing things differently. What we are doing may not be working, but at least we're familiar with it.
Oh,
right.
There
that's
it is.
The big thing. We keep doing the same thing over because it's familiar and we know how the results
are going
to come out.
Yeah. Even if it's bad,
right.
We've learned how to maneuver the bad.
Well, it's the whole insanity topic, right? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Because this time I'm gonna do it, but I'm going to do it differently. I'm not going to be into the influence of chemicals, right?
Right.
So it'll come out different, right?
Right.
That's the intention, but it turns out it comes out the same as it did. Then you're like, well, what's up with that?
Yeah.
I took the chemicals away, but yet I'm still having problems.
Right.
It takes courage to step out into the unknown. How do we find courage? We can look around ourselves at meetings. There we are with others who have found they need to change what we're doing and who've done so successfully. Not only does that help quiet out fear that any change spells disaster, it also gives us benefit of their experience and what does work, experience what we can use in changing what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's important.
Well, for me, that was like, okay, so I'm I'm sitting in you know, I'm sitting in jail. God just removed my obsession and my addiction. Now what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so That's kind of how I went into this recovery thing. It's like, okay, I don't know how to live life on life's terms without some kind of chemicals, legal or illegal.
Yeah.
You know, we can use all kinds of chemicals that are
legal. Yeah.
Right.
Well, the doctor gave it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, even coffee, right? Caffeine.
Sure.
We can use that, say excuses like it's legal or whatever.
I just want to address how this really speaks to the value of meeting attendance.
Exactly.
Right. We know meetings don't keep you sober by themselves. We get that. Right. But okay, I'm going to take a shot at the church now, and my Christian friends, bear with me here, but I'm sorry. I know the church is getting better at this, but for the most part, I am not going to see a transparency in people struggling with their stuff that I can identify on Sunday morning. I'm going to see it at these 12-step meetings. Right. I'm going to see it at these recovery meetings, 12-step or otherwise. I'm going to see it where people have become vulnerable and are going to share their experience, strength, and hope, what it was like, the mess, what happened, the solution, and how they're living it out, what it's like today.
Right.
And I'm going to see it at those meetings. I don't see it at church, and nothing wrong with that. It may not be the place for that. I'm just saying that's not where I'm going to see it. That's right. Been my experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And I know for me, when I started going to meetings, I went to meetings every day.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because for several reasons, right? Because right. I don't know how to live life on life's terms.
Yeah.
You know, the old school 90 meetings in 90 days, you know, all of that stuff. And I need to have a variety of things to find out what is going to work as well. And that whole 90 was just kind of an overview because I just was looking at 24 hours at a time. So I'm just going to keep going. I'm just going to keep going to meetings. That's just part of my daily routine.
Because you can't make a call on something by going once.
Well, it's just part of my daily routine.
Yeah.
And my recovery. I mean, at 24/7 in my addiction, I can trade that off by going to meetings or helping people every single day.
That's versus 90 dealers in 90 days.
Right, that's a great trade-off. I mean, where can you
right.
you get that great of a return on your investment? So I looked at 12-step groups that were at my church, right?
There you go.
So we used the Life Recovery Bible.
Right.
And we incorporated, you know, we put the two together.
Yeah.
And then, you know, every other.
It's good stuff.
12-step group, you know, NAAA, a group it's called DRA, which is Dual Recovery Anonymous, for people that struggle with addiction and mental health issues.
Right.
And it can be anywhere from, ADD to people dealing with schizophrenia.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Trying to hold their lives together and having to take medication in order to function appropriately in life. And still, you know, that's one of the big problems as in 12-step meetings is the medication thing is a
big controversy.
It's a big controversy. Nobody wants to talk about it. And I think that's a big, you know.
It's good to know that there are meetings, though, where that is not. That's not a thing,
right?
You know, so somebody might be talking to himself a little bit here and there, and it's not an issue. You're welcome because I get it.
Yeah.
You know, and so takes medication for this. I get it. We're not doctors, but I love that too, what you just said, because we claim we're not doctors, but boy, we sure walk around.
Oh,
like,
we're diagnosing everybody, right? And then projecting. Well, I mean, if you have like, if you're dealing with, you know, manic episodes.
And yeah.
People are, you know, they're automatically, you know, a lot of times thinking that you're on drugs or something.
Yeah. Or you're just a butthead. You're just a, yeah. You're just a jerk. You know,
you get the highs and lows.
Come
right?
back to the meeting tomorrow.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff.
So
anyway, I'm sorry.
No, it's all important. It all ties together. And we don't talk about these things enough.
No.
In the meetings where a lot of people are going to tie in their recovery.
Brother. Right? It's like, I said, well, this the only thing that is pertinent in this meeting is alcohol. Wait a minute. Alcohol is a symptom. Alcohol is only mentioned once in the steps. I mean, give me a break, right? So when you say these other things are outside issues, you know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
They're absolute. Oh, just don't get me going.
Well, and I think we're just like these conditioned things that we learn from our parents. We do the same thing in recovery, right? We're conditioned to act a certain way or say certain things at meetings. Well, yeah. We need to break that stereotype right there and do something different. And it's on us as people in recovery, especially long-term recovery, to make those adjustments at the meetings.
Yeah.
Or start a new meeting and do it.
You bet.
You know.
People do it all the time.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful thing. Yeah. Just ask Rob Kelly. I mean, he started a meeting, you know, and they got people bringing their kids. They're well behaved. They talk about everything and anything. They're always solution focused.
Right.
It's a family deal. I mean, but they stick to the literature. They stick to the point of recovery and not a bunch of opinions.
Yep.
And that's awesome stuff, man.
Yeah, that's we did a lot of the meetings that I was involved with. You know, there are some that are different, but most of the meetings that I ended up sticking with was like that. Like if you had kids, right? Someone would volunteer to,
do the daycare thing.
Yeah,
or whatever. Yeah.
Things like that, or my daughter came to meetings with me. Every time I went to a meeting, which was every day, when she spent time with me, there was a period of time that she would go with me to these meetings. She even went to an intervention with me one time.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
What's the next paragraph say?
We can also look at our own experience, even if that experience so far has been limited to stopping the use of drugs or alcohol. We have made many changes in our lives. I'm adding a little bit here and there, taking liberty.
That's okay.
But, because alcohol is a drug. Changes for the good. Let's see. Still, we have made many changes in our lives.
Changes for the good. Yeah.
Whatever aspects of our lives we have applied the steps to, we have always found surrender better than denial, recovery superior to addiction.
Mm.
Our own experience and the experience of others in NA tells us that changing the things I can is a big part of what recovery is all about. The steps and the power to practice them gives us direction and courage we need to change. We have nothing to fear. Just for today, I welcome change. With the help of my higher power, I will find courage to change the things I can.
Amen. Amen. With the help of my higher power. You've got to have the help of your higher power for the fear to drop off. And that's a wonderful thing when the fear of change, because that's one of the things that keeps us from it, right? The fear that things are going to be different because we found comfort in the dysfunction.
Well, in one of the biggest things that relationships, right?
Yeah.
Are a big thing, which ties all the way back to, the first, year or two of our lives,
right
and the self-esteem and all that stuff. So in our addiction, we may get into a relationship that when we're sober and changing our lives, we find out that it's very unhealthy and not very functional.
Mm-hmm.
So then we have to make a choice, right we either have to, with our partner, we either have to change together. Or maybe we need to end that relationship because it's toxic, and we just end up going right back, into the old behaviors, right?
Right.
Maybe our partner doesn't stop using chemicals, and we think a lot of people in recovery, myself included, early on, think that we got all this great information now, we can help other people, including our significant others, and so we want to help change them, and it oftentimes backfires.
Yeah, very, very often.
So or they we work on ourselves. If we can separate some of the things, we work on ourselves, and that person sees that change, and they also want that change, or they start changing their own behaviors as well.
You bet.
But oftentimes it's a very toxic thing, and it ends up bringing us back to our addiction.
Mm. Well, this has been a good show. Yeah, we covered a lot of ground. Thank you, Steve C. Again, if you got questions for Dave, send us an email, take12radio@comcast.net. We would love to hear from you, or just message us on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page is Take 12 Radio. Good deal, man. Well, it's good to see you.
Good to be seen.
As far as our closing song goes, here's something to think about. I understand completely the importance of identifying our issues before we're able, to get on a road of recovery from them. We cannot fix what we do not acknowledge. The importance, for instance, in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, for those attending who are alcoholic to introduce themselves as, "Hello, my name is so-and-so, and I am an alcoholic," is vitally important for the newcomer so he can identify. But is that what defines you and I? Yes, I am allergic to alcohol. It's a medical term for me, alcoholism. When I put alcohol on my body has an allergic reaction to it. Therefore, alcoholic. But it no more defines me than the booze in that amber-colored bottle does. What defines you and I today, hopefully, if you have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, is your relationship with God. So, hello, my name is Monty, and I am a child of the King. Here's Matthew West with his song, "Hello, My Name Is."
Hello, my name is Regret. I'm pretty sure we have met. Every single day of your life, I'm the whisper inside that won't let you forget. Hello, my name is Defeat. I know you recognize me. Just when you think you can win, I'll drag you right back down again till you've lost all belief. Oh, these are the voices. Oh, these are the lies. And I have believed them for the very last time. Hello, my name is Child of the One True King. I've been saved, I've been changed, I have been set free. Amazing grace is the song I sing. Hello, my name is Child of the One True King.
Hello, my name is
Mr. Matthew West. For more of his great music, visit his website at matthewwest.com. And don't forget, coming up this Wednesday is another Monty Man's Meditorial. And then, of course, on Saturday, we have Radio Rehab, The Road to Redemption with our friend Brian Duncan. And then next Monday, make sure you are right here for the Rob Kelly Hour with our friend and co-host, the world's addiction doctor, Dr. Rob Kelly. And in case you miss any of our shows, you can access all of our archives at take12radio.com on all major podcasting platforms. Until our next broadcast, may I remind you that because of God's incredible grace, you are entitled to overcome.
This has been a broadcast of KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.